Hey guys, and welcome to Moms and Murder, a true crime podcast featuring myself, Mandy, and my dear friend, Melissa. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, Mandy. How are you?
Doing great.
Great. Good to see you. We haven't seen each other for the last hour and a half.
I know.
We just finished recording our Patreon episode for August. Yay!
Yay! Yeah, it's a really good one. It's a long.
It's about an hour and a half. It's a real long one.
Yeah, we just covered the Robert Durst story or case as seen on the documentary that is like 6 hours long, The Jinx.
I mean, it's amazing that we took 6 hours and made it into an hour and a half because it was long, but it's really, really good. So
yeah, it is really good. So if you're interested in hearing our take on that very, very interesting case, you can pop on over to Patreon.
Patreon.com/momsmurderpodcast.
Correct.
Thank you. So, Mandy, let's get right into it this week.
All right. So this week's episode was a suggestion out of our Facebook group by Alex N., who thought we would have an interesting take on this bizarre murder that has one of the strangest defenses I have ever heard of, which makes total sense because the story comes to us from the bizarre defenses capital of the U.S., Florida.
Yay!
We love our fine state.
We do.
And all of the shenanigans that happen here. So this time we are visiting the town of Indie Atlantic, which is unfortunately only about an hour and a half from where we're sitting right now. So, Melissa, did you Google this city?
So what happens if one time I just say, no, I didn't?
We're going to stop recording and you're going to have to Google this city.
I just love how you worded it. It's perfect. So Indie Atlantic, the official name is Indie Atlantic by the Sea, but they go by Indie Atlantic for obvious reasons. The name comes because Indie Atlantic is between the Indian River Lagoon and the Atlantic Ocean. Good job. So as of 2010, there were 2,720 residents. Indie Atlantic is close to Melbourne, Florida, but Indie Atlantic is only actually 1.3 square miles, and 0.35 miles of that is in water. So there's like one square mile, like less than one square mile. It's crazy. It's not, yeah, I've never heard anybody say they're from there. Melbourne, no. Yes, but never that.
No, yeah.
Yeah, no. I don't even think I actually knew it was a real place.
Yeah.
So another interesting fact is that each year between May and October, the mother sea turtles swim to the Indian Atlantic shores, building nests and laying eggs. This is very varmints. I feel like we're in varmints. Yeah. So it takes approximately 2 months for the eggs to hatch, after which the baby sea turtles fixate on horizon lights and crawl towards the sea. So the interesting thing is like they come to that spot. They don't want to go any further. They're like, that is their home. And somehow they all know to go there, which I thought was really, really cool. Yeah. And the last fact, interesting or not, you decide. While there are only 11 officers in Indie Atlantic, including the chief of police, the officers on average are able to respond to a call within 2 minutes. Which you should be if your town's only one square mile.
Yeah.
Where are you going to be? I'm sorry, I was on the other side of the mile. I mean, what can you do?
So there are four key players at the center of today's story: two failing marriages, an affair, and a premonition of the bludgeoning death of a beautiful and talented nurse named Kelly Brennan.
So Kelly Brennan was the kind of person that anyone would want to have in their life. She was a wonderful daughter and sister to four other sisters, as well as a loving aunt to four nieces and nephews. When she married her husband, Gino Rallo, she became a loving stepmother of two children. When it came to her career, Kelly worked very hard and dedicated her life to her profession, which was nursing. She worked as a recovery nurse at Holmes Regional Medical Center and was highly regarded by her patients as well as her coworkers. She was extremely dedicated to helping others and even volunteered her free time as a recovery room nurse for medical mission work in Morocco, where she worked alongside ISMS, Operation Kids, and helped over 60 children in just 10 days. P.S. for my reality show friends, Morocco, 90 Day Fiancé, as on it, Nicole. So, sorry, had to bring that in.
I just have the most blank stare right now.
90 Day Fiancé, they go to Morocco. It's amazing. I love it. Kelly had a diagnosis of multiple sclerosis, but she did not let that slow her down. She was way more active than I was.
Yeah.
Coworkers said that she would work through her flare-ups with little complaints, and eventually she used her hobby as a cyclist to start raising money for MS by bike riding, which eventually led to the creation of a cycling group called Kelly's Heroes. In addition to cycling, Kelly also loved kayaking and all other outdoor activities. She was often on the go, taking her joyful spirit and contagious sense of humor with her.
Unfortunately, this is where the story takes a tragic turn. On February 15, 2010, Kelly failed to show up for an appointment with her personal trainer, and attempts to reach her were unsuccessful. Around 2 hours later, Kelly's roommate reported her missing. Friends, family, and police were all on the lookout for Kelly. They checked all the local hospitals and got the highway patrol involved, but she had vanished without a trace and nobody had seen or heard from the 46-year-old nurse. Then an unnerving 911 call came in, and a woman named Margaret Byers was on the other end, and she sounded nervous and scared as she told the operator that her daughter appeared to be having some type of nervous breakdown and that she had been rambling on all this nonsense about how she had this dream or vision in which everything was mostly black, but she could see Kelly's face as well as the sign for Mark's Landing, which was a beachside residential neighborhood in Melbourne, Florida, just up the road from Indy Atlantic, as we said before. The woman who claimed to be having these clairvoyant visions was no stranger to Kelly Brennan. Her name is Sheila Trott, and she had a long history of friendship with the missing woman. Sheila, who was a Canada native, loved the water and moved to the Florida coast and became a diving instructor while she went to college. The two had met 20 years prior to Kelly's disappearance and had been the kind of friends where you could just go years without seeing or speaking to each other, and then when you talk to them again, you just instantly pick right back up where you left off. When the two women first met each other, Sheila was working three jobs to help her husband Daniel go through flight school to become an airline pilot. And Dan was what some people would call a narcissist, but Sheila was head over heels in love with him, and the couple was married in August of 1989. The couple went on to have two sons named Creighton and Graham. While Kelly had begun her journey into nursing, Sheila became a real estate agent, and her husband Dan did earn his wings as an airline pilot. Another little fun fact about Dan, he was also into politics, and he was elected mayor of Indy Atlantic, and the two were considered a power couple, and they were well-to-do and seemed to have a perfect life. A town that size doesn't need a mayor, do they?
Listen, there's a town that has a dog as a mayor, so.
I don't think it says, like, a whole lot.
It's interchangeable at this point to me. So if there's one thing we've learned while doing these sort of stories is people that have a perfect life don't always have that perfect life. Like, you think they do, they don't. There were plenty of trouble in paradise for Sheila and good old Danny boy. He began having affairs, apparently multiple affairs, and Sheila would notice that he would take his wedding ring off and leave it on the counter. By January of 2009, after years of infidelity, Sheila decided that she'd had enough, and according to her, she asked him for a divorce. During this troubling time in Sheila's life and marriage, she met up with her old friend Kelly for a girls' night out. Sheila claims that during this dinner date, Kelly confided in her that she was also having marital problems with her husband, Gino, and she allegedly told Sheila that she, quote, wouldn't care if her husband had an affair, which Sheila said that she felt was a very strange thing for Kelly to say. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a strange thing for your friend to say.
Yeah, it would be. Eventually, Dan moved out of the home he shared with Sheila, and he just happened to join Kelly's cycling group. After spending time together cycling, Dan and Kelly began seeing each other outside of the sport, and their relationship turned into a full-blown affair, which the two of them both adamantly denied. At this point, Kelly was still actually married to Gino.
So this brings us back up to February 15th, 2010, the day that Kelly went missing. While police and family were stumped as to her whereabouts, Sheila was exhibiting some very bizarre behavior that did not go unnoticed by her two sons, who were 18 and 16 years old at the time. According to Creighton and Graham, Sheila had stated that she was going to Walmart and would be back later. It was between 6 and 7 p.m. when she left the house. 4 hours passed, and when she returned, the boys became concerned when Sheila stated that she was dizzy. And they said that she was shaking and acting strangely. She was banging her head on walls and just not acting quite right. So Creighton's girlfriend dialed 911. When the paramedics arrived, they could not find any physical cause for Sheila's symptoms. And after confirming that she was not in any sort of medical crisis, they left her at her home. But just an hour later, another 911 call was made and a female voice was recorded saying, quote, "My boyfriend's mom had a seizure about an hour ago. And they said to call back if she's been acting weird or anything, and she's acting very strange." This time the paramedics came and took Sheila to the local hospital, where she underwent a slew of tests that revealed absolutely nothing insightful about her unusual behavior. Sheila was released from the hospital in the twilight hours of February 16th, but the absolute weirdness did not end there. Sheila went to her bedroom, where she claimed to have fallen asleep, but was awakened by an interesting dream. She called for her son to come into her bedroom, where she hysterically told him that she'd had this terrible nightmare in which she could see Kelly's face in the dark, the sign for Mark's Landing, and she started saying all these things like, "I think I hurt Kelly," or "I think I may have hurt someone," or she was just going on and on about
this dream. Basically confessing.
But this is her whole thing. She just dreamt this. She didn't actually do it. She just dreamt it.
Right. So the boys, who were obviously horrified by what their mother was saying, decided to call their grandmother Margaret, who rushed over to the home to check on her daughter and grandsons and to find out more about what was going on. When she arrived, Sheila was curled up in the fetal position on her bed, shaking uncontrollably and carrying on about this vision or dream that she had about Kelly. Once again, a 911 call was placed from inside of Sheila's home. This time, her mother was on the line telling the operator that they needed a policeman because her daughter had some sort of a nervous breakdown and was stating that she believed she had murdered someone. I felt really bad for her mom at this point.
Yeah.
Because the mom, as this goes on, the mom, like, obviously using those words, it's going to come up later. It's, you know, and you're the one that said that she's saying these things. So when the operator asked for more information, Margaret stated that Sheila had said Kelly's name and that she was killed down at Mark's Landing. Police rushed to the home to speak to Sheila, who was still rambling on about her vision. They were instantly suspicious of Sheila's story, and once they connected the dots that Kelly Brennan was the woman who had been reported missing the night before, they believed they had a homicide on their hands and that Sheila was the murderer responsible for it.
How weird would this be for the police officers? I mean, I guess it's not really that weird because immediately you're just thinking like, okay, well, you did something to this woman. Like, you know, but I just think it's very strange to be like, to have, you know, to call your family members in and get, you know, get them all upset and worried and get them to call the police. And you're just going to go with this story that like you dreamt up something bad happened.
Right.
And then also say like the exact location where like it happened. Like, it just seems weird to me. Like, why bother going through all that? Just confess.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
it almost seems like, in my opinion, if she was guilty, that that it was like she had to get it out. Like, she wanted, like, maybe that's just her personality or whatever. Like, she has to get this out of her. But then it's like, I still want to distance myself from the situation.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. But I mean, totally bizarre. I've never heard anything like this.
Yeah. So the officers wasted no time getting a chopper in the air to fly over Mark's Landing looking for any signs of Kelly. It didn't take long before they spotted what appeared to be a leg sticking out of bushes in a wooded area, and when they got on the ground and searched, they were able to confirm that it was, in fact, the body of Kelly Brennan. They immediately noticed that all of her injuries were on her head, and they believed that she had been beaten to death with what they assumed was likely a hammer. The gruesome scene painted a clear picture. Whoever had killed Kelly had done so out of rage and a personal vendetta against her. Sheila was looking more and more like a psychopathic killer with every new development that unfolded. Sheila was arrested and brought in for questioning. From the interrogation room, she made a call to her son and told him that she was being charged with first-degree murder and would be in jail for a long time. But she told her son not to believe any of it, and it wasn't true, and that she had not really murdered Kelly. She was sticking with this clairvoyant story and maintained that her only connection to the murder was having this dream about it. So she hires this defense attorney named Todd Derritani to represent her case in court. And I looked up Mr. Todd Derritani on social media, and his Twitter profile picture, he's holding a cake that looks like boobs. So
yeah,
he seems like a really good guy to hire for your murder defense.
Yeah, that's, you know, he's got personality. I'll give him that.
Yeah. So he was unable to actually go through with defending Sheila because sometime between the time she hired him and the time that she was supposed to go to court, the Florida State Supreme Court had him permanently disbarred for taking people's money and then failing to represent him. So besides being an attorney, I mean, thankfully he had another job. So when he was disbarred, it wasn't the end of the road for him. He also owns a used car lot down there in the Indy Atlantic area. Wasn't it called Big Boys Cars or Bad Boys Cars or something?
It was Big Boys with a Z. Yeah. I trust nothing that changes S's to Z's. Even like, especially kids' places, when they do kids with a Z, I'm like, no. We're not going here. So investigators went to work trying to piece together the evidence against Sheila. Unfortunately, there was very little in the way of forensic evidence, and there was no DNA that would actually link Sheila to Kelly's murder. There was no witnesses to the alleged crime, and a murder weapon was never located. Before he was disbarred, Attorney of the Year Todd Derritani stated that he believed the prosecution had no case and there was plenty of reasonable doubt. In his opinion, this was a dream case, pun intended, for a defense attorney, and he was confident that he could get Sheila acquitted. Well, no. How would this be a dream case? No. literally a dream case.
Yeah.
So the prosecution, however, has a very different opinion. They gathered what little evidence they could find and put together a timeline and theory as to what had actually transpired between Sheila and Kelly. They knew that Kelly had made a phone call at 7:48 p.m. on the night of her murder, and they had learned that she would typically leave for her house around 8:15 p.m. to get to her appointment with her trainer at the gym. Oh, a nighttime workout?
Yeah, I would I don't make an appointment for anything at 8:15, but definitely not an appointment to work out.
I do. My bed.
Yeah.
That's it. So when her body was discovered, she was actually wearing her gym clothes, so the prosecution believed that she was killed sometime in between those two times. They observed further evidence that Kelly had been attacked outside of her own home, possibly when she was trying to get into her vehicle to head to the gym. There were divots in the grass on Kelly's front lawn, as well as bloodstains. They believed that Sheila had intentionally gone to Kelly's residence, waited outside for her in the dark, and ambushed her when she made her way to her SUV. After attacking her multiple times with a hammer, it's believed that Sheila then placed Kelly's body inside of her own SUV and drove down to Mark's Landing, where she dumped the body. Kelly's blood was located on the passenger side floorboard of her SUV, supporting this theory. After Sheila disposed of the body, she then drove Kelly's SUV to a random condo parking lot and left it there.
Smart.
Yeah. Genius.
Yeah.
Are you ready to revolutionize the way you enjoy food and essentials at home? Introducing Dash Pass from DoorDash, your ultimate ticket to convenience and savings. With Dash Pass, you gain exclusive access to unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders, along with members-only deals and discounts that will leave your wallet smiling. Whether you're craving the flavors of your favorite restaurants, need groceries from across town, or anything in between, Dash Pass ensures that everything you need is just a few clicks away, delivered right to your door. With Dash Pass, not only do you enjoy $0 delivery fees, but you'll also benefit from lower service fees on eligible orders, making it the most affordable way to satisfy your cravings and stock up on essentials from your local favorites. What I really love is how quickly Dash Pass pays for itself. On average, it takes just 2 orders, which makes it a no-brainer investment for your budget. And as if that weren't enough, Dash Pass grants you special access to exclusive promotions and menu items, adding an extra layer of excitement to your DoorDash experience. You get all this for only $9.99 a month, which is a small price to pay for unlimited convenience and savings. My family and I have had DoorDash for the past year or so, and while I make most meals at home, I don't know that I could mom without it. I used it twice just this past week while we were dealing with a stomach bug at home, and it was so nice to have and to be able to focus on getting better and not running all over town to pick everything up for everyone. Don't wait. Sign up for Dash Pass now and unlock a world of possibilities, all from the comfort of your home. Dash Pass from DoorDash, delivering joy, convenience, and savings straight to your doorstep.
Get more from delivery for less with Dash Pass. $0 delivery fees and reduced service fees on eligible DoorDash orders. Sign up for Dash Pass today and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change. Terms apply. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for Dash Pass today, only on DoorDash, and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply.
During the investigation, Sheila alleged that she would have no reason to kill Kelly because it was her who had actually set Kelly and Dan up in the first place.
I love that part. Yeah. Like, we're supposed to be like, oh, yeah, you have like a tumultuous relationship with your husband and you're going to set him up with your best friend.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Like, that made no sense whatsoever. No. She claimed that she encouraged Kelly to start a relationship with her ex-husband because she thought they would be good for each other. And she knew that Kelly would be good with her 2 sons. So she says she thought that it would be the perfect situation. It would be like for her sons, you know, to have.
Well, I could start to buy that part of it. Like, if you think you're leaving your spouse and you're going to be worried about your kids, you don't want, oh my gosh, my husband has terrible taste in women. Present company included, I would be terrified of who he would pick to have around our kids.
So. But they were 16 and 18, though, so yeah. It's not like they really need a whole lot of mothering from a stranger, you know, at this point. Like, they still have
She's
their
still
mom.
Around. Yeah,
exactly.
It's not like a little
They're
baby.
Not little, exactly. Yeah. So the prosecuting attorneys did not buy this, and they believed that her story of being Little Miss Matchmaker was all part of her scheme to cover up what she had actually done. They believed that she had been seething over the affair that Dan and Kelly were having. I would agree that's probably closer to the truth.
She seemed like a seether.
Yes, she did. And that her absolute anger and rage over it led her to murder. When asked what to make of the fact that there was no evidence, like DNA and all that, the prosecuting attorney said that the lack of forensic evidence only suggested to her just how premeditated this crime was, that Sheila had planned this murder down to the last detail, knew what she was doing, had specifically taken measures to avoid having DNA evidence.
Right.
Which I can get behind that. Like, I can see, like, you know, because their whole thing, of course, her defense is like, there's nothing to prove that she was there. There's nothing there to connect her to the murder. You know, all of this other than, you know, this dream that she had.
That she said.
Right. And literally said, go to Mark's Landing. You're going to find Kelly's body there. I dreamt it. Like, okay.
And how many times did she say, if it wasn't for me, they would have never even found her? It's one square mile. Yeah. They were going to find her.
They were. Yeah. Somebody would have found her. While Sheila was in jail being held on charges of first-degree murder and awaiting trial, she actually penned a letter that was several pages in length in which she outlined her account of what had happened that night. She claimed that her memory had now returned, and she was clear on what happened, and it was actually a completely different story than the original I Had a Dream speech that she had given to her family and police. In the letter, she said that her dream was actually a memory of someone else killing Kelly while she looked on from a distance. She wrote that she had gone to Kelly's home that night to ask her to stop coming by her house looking for Dan. But when she arrived, she saw that a man was already in the process of attacking Kelly. But she claims that for some unknown reason, she did nothing to stop the attack and did not call the police. But she said she did not know why.
Can you hear my eyes rolling?
Yeah. So she further went on to claim that after she had witnessed this terrible attack on her best friend. She claimed that she followed the killer and watched as this person dumped Kelly's body in Mark's Landing. So she just was sitting in her car following, just watching all this. Isn't doing anything. Yeah. Doesn't ever think, like, I should call the cops.
You have enough sense to follow. Well, actually, that's not a lot of sense. To follow to see where, like, let's see where this brings us.
Yeah.
You know? And then you're not going to call the police on the way to say I'm following somebody dumping my best friend off and the future stepmother to my children. Give me a break. So during the trial, Sheila's two sons took the stand actually against her. They each gave their account of the night and the way their mother had been acting and how it was so strange. And they were super concerned that night about her, obviously. And they called 911 several times because they didn't know what was wrong with her. From the stand, one of her sons also dropped a bombshell that they hadn't even told police until shortly before the trial. He stated that when Sheila kept talking about Mark's Landing and Kelly being hurt, he offered to drive her down there so that she could take a look around and ease her mind that it was just a dream and that Kelly was okay. Sheila, her two sons, and her son's girlfriend all got in the car and took a field trip to Mark's Landing. And with Sheila leading the way, they had stumbled upon Kelly's body, at which point the two boys told their mother they wanted nothing to do with this and that she would have to figure it out herself.
Okay, I know they're her sons, but one of them is 18, like... I mean, I guess I that's a hard situation. If your mom did this and like, and then all of a sudden, like, you go there and like you actually find a dead body, like, I don't know. I would do a little more than just say, well, this is, you're on your own. Like,
you know, like, I'm never doing the dishes again. Yeah. I don't understand. Like, how the nobody thinks to call the police. Nobody tells anybody, like, that's one of the more bizarre parts of this whole thing, I think. So Sheila decides to not take the stand in her trial. Good idea. Todd Derritani later said that he believed she didn't testify because the letter she wrote in prison was a confession and that she had definitely committed this murder.
So he changed his tune quite a bit.
Oh, he did. He was like, dream case, you're guilty.
He pretty much at the end was like, no, she did it. Like, the only reason you would write down all this crap is because you're guilty. It's a confession.
Yeah. So, yeah, whenever he did that and he was all confident, I'm like, hang on, bud. Hang on.
Yeah. The defense attempted to prove that someone else had committed the murder by pointing fingers at Kelly's husband, who they claimed would have had a good reason to kill her because she was having an affair with Dan. However, surveillance from a Walgreens in another town proved that Gino had not been anywhere near Kelly's home during the time of the murder. Sheila's mom maintained a positive attitude throughout the trial and believed that her daughter would be acquitted and would be coming back home to Canada.
That poor lady was living in a dreamland.
She was. I know. Sadly for her, the jury came back after 3 hours of deliberating and returned a guilty verdict. The judge sentenced Sheila on the spot to life in prison, and she still maintains her innocence to this day and says that she believes the real murderer is still out there. Sheila is a moron. Don't be like Mandy. Sheila.
Oh, gosh. That sounds like a Melissa line if I've ever heard it. Yeah. Wow. That is... You got to wonder, had she not had this premonition, a.k.a. confession, would they ever have been able to tie it to her?
If there was no DNA. So, I mean, well, as soon as they figured out that she was having
affairs and stuff.
Right.
They suspect.
Yeah, exactly. The cops are going to figure things out. And they're bored over there. They probably don't have a lot to do in Indian Atlantic.
They got a whole mile to deal with. Yeah. Yeah,
so I think they would have figured it out.
Yeah, no, but it is weird. Like, I don't know. You've managed to murder somebody, cover it up, do all this, not leave DNA. Now you're going to literally tell 911's called to your house 3 times.
Yeah, I know.
You're banging your head into a wall, lady. You got to calm down.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Well, and that was the thing too. Oh, and then whenever they said that she went to Walmart and it was she had come home from this like 4-hour trip to Walmart. I'm like, nobody is doing anything at Walmart for 4 hours. I don't even want to spend 4 minutes in a Walmart.
You are in and out as quick. I mean, well, the lines take a while. IKEA, you spend like 4 hours. In. Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's like purgatory. Yeah. I hate Walmart so much.
Me too.
Yeah. So. Wow, that was a very interesting case, Mandy. Super excited that it happened in Florida because yeah. We can't get enough of that. Like, we keep trying to leave Florida, and guess what?
That's just where all the best stories come
from.
Too
many interesting things.
Yeah.
I agree. So we have a couple last things before we go. So this comes from Tiffany P. in our Facebook group. Name a time that you felt like the worst mom in the world and later thought you were being dramatic. So I'm going to tweak this just a little to do parenting mistakes that you've made that maybe haunt you forever. I've got one.
Okay.
You'll see what I mean. So one time my son wanted to go down the slide and for some reason he wanted me to go with him. I know I've told you about this. And I put my backpack on and it's like this really steep slide. And I'm kind of holding him. I think he would have been like 15 months or something. So he's in front of me. Well, as we go, I guess I'm quite a bit heavier than a 15-month-old. And his legs go under and bend underneath. And so the rest of the way is like – It's like the most horrifying, you know, feeling with his legs underneath going down the slide. And I get down and he's hysterically crying. And the first thing I do is stand him up and he drops to the ground. And I thought, oh my gosh, I've broken this kid's legs. So I did the natural thing, which is immediately stand him up again. He drops again and then, you know, crying hysterically. Somebody walks by, judgmental eyes, completely like, gosh. Why is a 6-foot-tall woman going down a slide? Like a big old idiot. And so anyway, he walked and his legs are not broken. But it was one of those like, how could you be so like parenting 101? Monsters that big should not go on slides with itty bitty babies. So, yeah, I learned my lesson, but I think back to that a lot. It's just... So shocking. Yes. Mandy loves that story, apparently.
I do. Oh, my gosh. I can't stop laughing. I mean, it's like just because I know. Like,
you know exactly where I was, too, right?
Probably.
Yeah. It's one of the
– It's just horrifying, like, because things like that, though. But it's like once it's happening, like
– You can't stop it. You can't
do anything. And then you do think about it, and you're like, that was so stupid. I should not have done that. Okay. Oh. I don't have any stories like that.
Well – That does not help.
But no, there's – I mean, I have, like, just, like, stupid parenting moments
Perfect.
That I've done.
Do that.
But good. One of the most recent ones I did was we had gone to the beach and, you know, I'm very, very vigilant about putting sunscreen on my kids.
Right.
Like, and my husband doesn't help me with that task. I have to remember on my own to, like, remember that the kids need to have sunscreen reapplied and all that
yeah.
stuff. So I'm always the one running around like a crazy person, like – rubbing them down with sunscreen. Well, we had this particular day, like we had been out there a while and I reapplied at least 3 times. Well, I guess on my younger son, now thinking back, I'm like, did I ever put sunscreen on his legs or not?
Don't you love that kind of thing where you're like, well, maybe.
Yeah. And so, we get home like at night and like they take a bath or whatever. And like, he's like, mom, my legs really hurt. Like the back of my legs hurt. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, well, let me look at your legs. They are burnt. I mean, like, to a crisp, but the rest of his body's fine. Like, yeah. I covered everything else. But the back of his legs is so red. They're like, it's like almost purple. And I'm like freaking Aww. Out. Like, I was like, oh my gosh, like, I feel so terrible. And like, yeah. I know that hurts, you know? And so I really was freaking out. And so, of course, I put on all the aloe and all this stuff and like just covered him in it, you know? And I was like patting his skin with vinegar Aww. To like take away the sting Aww. And like all this stuff. And I felt so bad. And thankfully, it must have been the vinegar, I think, apple cider vinegar. because the next day he actually, it was almost gone. Like, it wasn't that bad.
Right.
But, I mean, it was still burnt, but I just felt so terrible. Like, I was like, how could I take my kid to the beach and then, like, not put
some? Yeah.
And then you start thinking about, like, all the what ifs. And I'm like, what if I had, like, really forgot to put it, like, all over his body? And, like, you know, then you start, like, panicking. And I'm like, am I fit to take children to the beach? Like, I don't know.
These are, like, real things that absolutely do happen. You know, my little guy's a redhead, so I'm always, like, super, super terrified that he's – I mean, he gets burnt every time we go anywhere. It doesn't matter how much I put on him. But yeah, but that's like the exact same thing. After you do it, you're like, did I put it here? Like behind his ears. I have to do like really weird things with my son. But yeah. Oh, man. I totally get that feeling because you like it's totally your fault.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Like, you know it's your fault. Like there's nobody else to blame. Like I'm like, this is definitely falls on my responsibility.
You're like, Mom, why did this happen?
I know.
Oh, we're the worst. So we have one more and I really like this. And Roxana in our Facebook group, Roxana C, she's being a little aggressive with us. She said, I put this in a few weeks ago, but I'm going to be stubborn and submit it again. Well, we don't always take yelling, but our kids yell at us, and normally that gets us to work, so we'll do it. So based on your child's current obsession, what will their future occupation be? Oh, my gosh. Is there a butt picker? Because I got one of those. What do you have any?
Well, mine are going to be professional video game
players. Oh, yeah.
And if they really hit it big, they're going to also be playing video games on YouTube for the rest of their life because that's literally the only thing they care about right now.
I'm with you. My daughter is Minecraft obsessed, and your son, they're buddies with it. My son's new favorite thing to say is, thanks. Wait, what does he say? What's the sign off on YouTube? Like, subscribe and whatever.
Oh,
now
yeah.
I'm like, oh, dear God. Like, that's how I think that's how he thinks to say goodbye now. Yeah. Like, it's like a whole thing.
Like, it's like a new greeting.
It is. Yeah. My son is obsessed with like all things car and stuff. So I would say based on that, he would be a mechanic. And my daughter is obsessed with, I don't know, gymnastics right now. She knows she's really into gymnastics. So I would say a gymnast, but that seems dangerous. So I don't want that.
Yeah, I know. I mean, other than that, my kids just like regular kid stuff. Like they want to swim all the time. Maybe they'll be Olympic swimmers.
Yeah.
Which make me much happier than a professional YouTube video game player.
Yeah. I mean, they can make some money, Mandy.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
Treat them well.
Yeah. I should be fostering this.
I know. My husband will see where it says like 82 million YouTube viewers and he's like, we could do that. And I'm like, you got to stop doing this. Like, we could do that. I'm like, he and my daughter wanted to start a YouTube channel once and they fought the entire time just coming up with a name up. It was so terrible. I'm like, and you want to do this every week? He's like, she just won't do what I'm wanting her to do. I'm like, because she wants to make money and she wants to have fun.
So yeah. That's
We're just great parents all around.
Yeah.
So thanks for sending those in, guys. And we will be back in 1 week. Oh, we're back to weekly now.
Yay!
I mean, we're cheering more and we're excited.
We are.
We are excited. Yeah. Just a lot of work.
I know. Yeah. I know. I got a new computer though.
Yay.
So
thank you, Patreon.
Yeah. So I'm super happy to
that helped.
Have that. So, and it's always fun when you have like a new thing and then like for a while you're like really excited to use it. So like I'm trying to keep riding that wave while I still feel that way.
Yeah.
So now I'm like, I love my new computer. I just want to get to work and type and like do all that stuff. So I'm trying to do as much of that as possible while I still feel like it.
I'm fostering that and just being a terrible mother on the side. So thanks so much for sending those in, guys. We'll have this for next week as well. And we have a promo this week from our friend Nikki with Strictly Homicide. So stay around.
Notorious Nikki T.
No. I'm like, I can't even talk anymore. I'm just like slurring and all kinds of stuff. So yeah, so check out that promo at the end of the episode and we will see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm Nikki T, the host of Strictly Homicide, a narrative true crime podcast that covers the lesser known cases that have happened in the natural state. Find us on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, and all major podcast apps. Visit strictlyhomicide.com or find us on social media by searching Strictly Homicide Podcast. Until then, stay safe, especially you, Arkansas.
Thanks so much for listening to the Moms of Murder podcast. Make sure to check back with us next week for a new episode. You can also find us at momsandmurder.com, where you can connect with us via social media. please make sure you subscribe and give us 5 stars, because giving us 4 stars would be a crime. Thanks so much.